Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. This week, I'm pleased to welcome back a fellow podcaster, my friend Rachel Wagner, who is the woman behind the website, Rachel's Reviews, and Hallmarkies Podcast. Well, this is such a joy to have my friend Rachel with me, one of my favorite people. I always learn a lot when I talk to you, Rachel, about animation. So thanks so much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's been a really nice little spring for me, very productive, and it's been great.
So what have you been up to lately on your podcasts and anything you want to share with us for the people who love listening? I saw that you were doing something with Mary Tyler Moore Show, which is favorite show ever. So
oh,
I was
really?
Excited. Yeah.
Oh, maybe we'll have to have you on for a future episode. Yeah. I mean, right now for Hallmarkies Podcast, which is my biggest project, you know, that I work on the most, right now it's kind of an in-between time because they're not a whole lot of new movies. Obviously it's post-Christmas and there's not any of the shows because that's what does the best for us, whether it's When Calls the Heart or The Way Home or, you know, one of the Hallmark TV shows. And so our audience is used to, and our sponsors are used to us doing at least 3 episodes a week. And so it comes up to a certain degree of creativity of, you know, kind of what is within, we've done some true bonus episodes that don't really have anything to do with romance or Christmas. But, you know, you try to think of what might interest our audience and just what I can get somebody to come on and talk to me about. And my friend Bree started watching the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I'm a huge fan of it as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so we were talking about it, and so we did season one, our favorite episodes of season one, last fall. And then we just posted our favorite episodes of season two, just this last week. It was interesting because we actually recorded it in February. And then it was just like, it was one of those evergreen episodes that I just kind of kept along because had no timeline.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I can post it whenever I want. So it was fun to finally get that out there. And great show. It's just so genuinely funny.
And I know every single character. And I'm from Minneapolis, so it's a favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of very many shows that were able to evolve so effectively. I mean, you think that like Sue Ann Nivens doesn't get on that show until season 4.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like such an iconic character. And I can't think of that many shows that were able to lose cast, gain cast, and just still stay funny. And a lot of shows, this is going off to television, but I feel like a lot of television shows have like 2 good seasons in them.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're lucky, 4. And then it starts to get real hit and miss after that. You can tell they're just like, they don't have the ideas. They don't have the, and I think that's pretty common. But not with Mary Tyler Moore is the exception. I mean, that show is just almost every episode.
Yeah.
Is really funny.
So good. I know. There's so much I love about it. And they lose like one of the most iconic characters, Rhoda. You know, like in the middle there or a couple seasons in, and like you said, gaining and losing cast. I mean, my goodness.
Rhoda, Phil. I mean, you think of the number of shows that spin off of it is incredible.
Yeah.
I think only
Lou Grant even. Yeah.
Lou Grant, Phyllis, Rhoda.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
That's a good one.
It's a really fun show. And so that was fun for Hallmarkies Podcast. It's fun to see like, oh, what some of my friends are interested in, and that will sometimes lead me into something I never experienced. Like a while back, we did an episode on K-dramas, and so that was fun to kind of dive into that.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, so we create so much content that it's just it just almost by necessity forces you to kind of be creative.
I love that. That's what I enjoy about this podcast, is it sends me down rabbit holes because I always kind of like cater it to my guests or let them choose, what they're interested in. I think I approached you with Aardman. I wanted to do something with animation because we've done some really fun episodes. We've done some rom-coms and things, but animation is an area of expertise for you.
Yes.
And I'm a fan, but I'm not, I don't have the knowledge that you do in it. So I was eager to consult you. And I know that you also did an interview, with the people behind Aardman, years back. So I was eager. I always loved, I think I first discovered Wallace and Gromit early '90s because of, Siskel and Ebert raving about, the wrong trousers and those shorts. So that's how I first, I think they aired on PBS once. I think it might have been after the Oscars or around that time. So that's how I first saw them. I bought a digital copy of the complete collection. I think I might have a Blu-ray somewhere, but I know they're hard to find. I just love those original shorts. And then of course the cool things they did onward. So what is your interest in Aardman and how did you get, how did you discover them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've always just sort of known about them and I always been a big fan of especially Wallace and Gromit and the shorts, like you said, very similar. And then Chicken Run, that was a favorite and it became kind of a tradition to watch it on Thanksgiving, even though it's chicken, not turkey. It feels kind of in that,
seasonal.
And I love Chicken Run and I've always loved about stop motion animation is the attention to detail and the world building that they can create. Everything is handmade. Everything is, it's just, I don't know. I've just always thought it was so charming.
Yeah. It's craftsmanship on another level. Like you were saying, like every little, so much attention to detail. There's of course, I mean, they can do that in, you know, computer animation, like jokes within jokes, but there's just a richness and a texture to it that I love. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that Aardman manages to weave such great humor into all of their films that, I mean, I think their weakest film is probably Early Man, but it's not terrible. Like it was just a little bit boring. It just didn't quite land, but it's still the world building and the humor and it just makes it a joy to watch. I think their films.
I agree with you. Yeah. I think also they root it in the everyday and they also root it in a curiosity of technology and discovery, inventing things. So it's kind of like tinkering about tinkering, which I like. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think they also capture the spirit of sort of another era of, particularly of comedies, of a silent movie almost.
There's appeal, like a throwback. Yeah.
A throwback, especially the Shaun the Sheep. We'll talk about that. But that one especially, I think, is a real homage.
Yeah, you can almost imagine. I mean, Aardman got started in the 70s, and I know they did some animated work that played to deaf children audiences and stuff like that. But it almost feels like you could put one of the Wallace and Gromits on right after like Jeeves and Wooster or Fawlty Towers or that kind of thing. Yeah.
I agree. I agree. I should say their worst movie is the Chicken Run sequel, not Early Man.
Chicken Run sequel was not great.
It was very disappointing. not great. Yeah. No. Which I was nervous when when the Vengeance Most Foul. Because I was pretty disappointed.
I thought that was hilarious, actually.
And really good. I really enjoyed it. And so that was a real step up from the Chicken Run sequel.
It was a nice surprise. I loved what they did with this gnome bot or Norbot. Which was a gnome robot hybrid. It kind of brought back the penguin from the Wrong Trousers, that idea of a villain. I didn't realize how much knitting was used throughout all of their movies, but I'm a crocheter, so I love that.
That's true. I mean, I was watching the shorts this morning, and that was one of the things that stood out to me. It's just like, I can't even imagine how hard it must be to animate like a teeny tiny character, like of grommet knitting. And when they pick up the balls of yarn, I mean, stuff like that, I can't even imagine how long that would take. And they didn't even have 3D printers and, you know, stuff like that that we have now that make it easier for the stop motion animators.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you. I think it's cool that these are characters that, like I said, invent and knit. And as you were saying, the amount of work that would have gone into these claymation stop motion figures doing these intricate things is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite of the original shorts?
I think that probably A Close Shave is probably my favorite.
That one's a lot of fun.
I love Sean. It's Sean, that's the introduction of Sean the Sheep, and I love that character and just the whole, again, silent comedy of it. That one's probably my favorite. And just so many good jokes. Like, I love when Gromit is in jail and reading Crime and Punishment.
Yes. Yeah. I love how they work those things in. Like, I think my favorite is The Wrong Trousers, but we have a scene in there with Gromit reading The Republic
too.
By Pluto instead of Plato. I know. They're so good.
I mean, they're all, I would still say that I think that the shorts are still the best thing they've ever made.
I agree with you. I think the creativity, the sky was the limit. They didn't know what they didn't know. They didn't know what they could do. So they weren't limited. They were just going for it. And you can kind of tell. In case people are new to this animation house, they've been nominated for Academy Awards multiple times. I think they've won at least 4 Oscars. Started winning early for some of these shorts that they did.
They Creature Comforts, that was their first Oscar.
I don't know if I've seen that. Have you?
Yeah, it's about like the different animals. So it's not a Wallace and Gromit, but it still has their aesthetic. And they won in 1990. That was their first Oscar, which is pretty amazing. And then they won for The Wrong Trousers and A Close Shave. Which
that's
is
incredible.
And then they won, of course, for Curse of the Were-Rabbit. And I like Were-Rabbit. I think it's a nice homage to classic Universal monster movie kind of stories. And those little bunnies are the cutest thing in the world. But I don't know if I would have it that high in my ranking. I mean, of course, that year was a really unusual year for the Academy Awards because there was no CG animation, no computer animation film. It was all either 2D or stop motion that was nominated, because Corpse Bride was nominated that year.
Oh, wow. And, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And 2005. Let's see what else. I think it was Howl's Moving Castle, I think.
Okay.
Was the let me see here.
And sure. I know Miyazaki is a big Aardman fan.
That makes sense.
Yeah, can kind of see that. And I like when they support each other like that. But I was looking up because I've always been curious about the name. I didn't know where it was coming from, but it was the brainchild of them as teenagers, which they thought the word aardvark was really funny. And
Oh,
they combined aardvark and Superman and just like plugged it in when someone said, well, who should we make the check out to? And they had to just come up with a name and went with Aardman just to make themselves laugh, you know, teenage humor. And they
really?
stuck with it. Yes.
That's cool. So yeah, this year, that year, it was one of those weird years where there were only three nominees for animation. And so
Oh,
they had,
wow.
yeah, so they had Wallace and Gromit, and then Howl's Moving Castle and Corpse Bride.
And it went to Howl?
It
Or
went
did...
to, no, it went to Wallace and Gromit. They
Oh,
won that.
okay. Oh,
Yeah.
that's right. You just
So
said
they
that.
won
Yeah.
that year, and it was just an unusual, I don't think we'll ever have it again, where there's no computer animation. That's all.
Yeah, and this was around the time they had when it was Flushed Away, was that right after that, where they had made a computer generated film?
Yeah, you're right. So Flushed Away was 2006, so that would have been right after. Yeah, you're
Oh,
right.
okay.
Yeah. And then Arthur Christmas, that was 2011. So both of those were both CG animation done
Yeah.
in the style of their, looks like
Yeah,
their
aesthetic.
design, their
Yeah.
aesthetic. Yeah, that's the word. And I absolutely love Arthur Christmas. I
I
think
do
that
too.
it's so underrated as a holiday film.
Should we dive into that one next
Yeah,
and
let's
then
talk
kind of
about it.
backtrack? You
Yeah.
know, I thought I had seen it, but I don't remember it at all. So I was really glad you suggested it because I actually watched it over the weekend and I thought, oh, I saw this when it came up. No memory of it whatsoever. So
Yeah.
maybe I just saw previews and somehow missed it that year, but it was such a delight, Rachel. So thank you so much for suggesting it, kind of an 11th hour, like, hey, what if we do this one? So that was really good call. I thought it was so sweet, so funny. And what was cool about it is it has these like sci-fi elements, like a little bit of Star Trek and other stuff worked into it, but the sweetness is there. The killer, cast. And I just, it's very British, which I appreciate. You know,
Yeah.
sometimes you would imagine they would get extremely Americanized or they would go Hollywood, if you will, but they stuck to that. And I love that.
I also really love the whole dynamic between the two brothers, because you've got the military brother.
Yes.
He's like, but he's not really a, like, he's not like a bad guy. He just
No.
he just has been sort of he's on the wrong track. Needs
Yeah,
to be
Hugh
helped.
Laurie, such a great voice.
Yeah. And so it's not about like a bad person or a good person. It's about what's best for people and for Christmas, and what's the best way to kind of live your life. And so it gives it like huge heart, the
It
movie has.
does. I
Yeah.
agree with you. And I think it's also like putting the people over self, which is a good idea because, you know, like don't just go for the power or for, you know, the power grab.
Yeah.
Who wants to take over the mantle and be Santa, for the next whatever many years? It's who's really ripe for the job, who has, you know, the sincerity in their heart. And of course, it's going to go to the person who isn't clamoring to get it, who
Yeah.
actually is genuine and like wants to deliver the gift. James McAvoy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and isn't it fun to watch a Christmas movie off season?
It really is. I
I
had a
love it.
ball, especially because
Love
it's
it.
so hot already. I don't know what the
Yeah.
weather is in Utah, but here in Phoenix, we're in the 90s already. So it was nice to just kind of see a bunch of snow and think of Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. When the Christmas in July movies come out, usually like one or two a year from
It's
Hallmark,
nice.
I think I'm a lot more friendly than if they were part of the actual, 40 movie drop that they do,
Yeah, where you get
because it's just like,
exhausted.
oh,
Yes.
I love the feels.
Yeah.
And
I love it. It kind of brings back a sense of nostalgia because I worked at the Hallmark store when I was a
Oh, you
teenager
did?
and yeah, in the mall and we would get the ornaments in July and the, you know, the little book. And so people would place orders. So it brings back that idea of how excited everyone was about the upcoming holiday in July. Yes.
Yeah. And And I don't know. It's just, it's nice to have that sort of reminder of something sweet and comforting yeah. and, you know, all of that, that, that especially, I feel like this, especially this time of year, I feel like things are kind of dragging a little bit for most of us. We need that pick me up.
Yes, we need that boost, and Arthur Christmas is perfect for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you talked about, speaking of seasonal viewings, like how much fun you and your family have watching Chicken Run. I remember seeing this one in the theater when it was new. I think it was one of the last movies that I saw. It felt like it in Minneapolis before I moved down to Phoenix. And so I have that memory too, that sense of nostalgia, I think, of going out in the parking lot and I believe seeing snow. I think it was winter. Maybe this is a trick of the memory. But I thought Chicken Run was hilarious. I like the mix of like British voices. And I mean, we're not going to talk about him as a person, but the voice and the performance of Mel Gibson as Rocky the Rooster is really funny. And I think you need someone with that sort of braggadocio, you know, that quality that makes it really great. I also remember some of the line deliveries, like, I don't want to be a pie. Like,
yes. I don't even like gravy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very quotable movie.
Yes.
Which is really good.
I hadn't seen it in forever, but I remembered some of those lines. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so funny.
Are you back on holiday?
Yes. It's kind of like Stalag 17, basically, but we're in a POW camp, essentially.
Yeah.
But,
like the Great Escape.
Yes, the Great Escape.
Again, I mean, that's what was just disappointing about the sequel is they just basically did the exact same movie over again.
Yeah. I know. You know? It was like 20 years later, let's do it again. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 25 years.
This time they were breaking in as opposed to breaking out. But it's like, there was no reason for that. Like, you could have the characters do anything. And you look at, like, the difference between Shaun the Sheep and Shaun the Sheep Farmageddon. Like, those are very different stories. One's just outright screwball comedy, and one is like, you know, got the sci-fi kind of thing too. And so there was no reason that they had to do that for Chicken Run. So I'm not sure why they felt like, oh, well, we got to copy the exact same story for this.
Yeah, exactly. The originality of the first one was what made it so special, I think. And just like you could say Wallace and Gromit feels like Fawlty Towers or Jeeves and Wooster, like one of those. Chicken Run, like you said, it's the Great Escape. It's that sort of like dudes on a mission movie from the 60s. So they're sort of always looking back to the past or nostalgic qualities, which I love.
Yeah, I mean, there's this element of parody to it all, which is really fun. And I mean, I in a world where we so rarely get dishy villains anymore for animated films, Mama Tweety, is really good. She
terrifying.
Is really scary. Fun.
Yes.
I love her.
I know.
So much.
Yeah, they get so much mileage out of her, and just, you know, you feel the terror. I remember it kind of made me feel the same way I felt when I saw Babe for the first time, where it was like, I didn't want to eat any meat for a little bit. Like, I saw that. I'm like, I don't know that I want nuggets. I don't want a chicken pot pie. I don't want, like, we're going to change our diet for a while.
Yeah. I think if I had to come up with like my favorite just pure scenes in film, I think Farmer Hoggett trying to cheer up Babe.
Oh, where he's dancing. But,
yeah.
Love it. If
I had words to make a day for you. Yes. Yeah. That whole sequence, that would probably make my list.
We're going to just start crying now thinking of the movie Babe, but yeah, as one does. Yeah,
oh, it's so good. It's another movie that is funny. It's sweet. It balances, you know, tone so well. It's
light years different than the sequel as well. You know,
that's true.
Like you were saying with Shaun the Sheep. Yeah,
I like the sequel, but yeah, absolutely. It's totally different than the original.
Yeah, and that's
Yeah.
clever. Kind of like some of
Yeah.
the Muppet movies, same thing, you
That's
know?
true.
Yeah, like Muppets Take Manhattan, Muppet Caper. Like some of these are very different.
Yeah, or even like the first three Toy Story movies. I mean, I like Toy Story 4 more than
Yes.
most, but especially those first three really are each quite different films.
They are.
You
Yeah.
know?
And talk about there are some terrifying villains in those movies.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
the first one is like your buddy movie. And
Yes.
then the second one is
Getting over
is
your childhood trauma kind of thing.
yeah, you know,
Yeah.
and there's also a sense of like a bit of an escape kind of movie. And then
Yes.
that third one is really like a jailhouse
Oof.
escape, you know,
Yeah.
thing.
That was intense. Yes.
Yeah. Lotso.
Yeah. We're gonna call this episode like Jen and Rachel relive all of these movies. No.
Yes.
It's just a hangout. Yeah.
I want to talk about something though, because so when I watch the Shaun the Sheep movies, I feel like those movies are so similar to the Minions movies in style and tone, but so
Oh
much better. But
wow.
so much
That's
better. And it's like,
interesting.
why is it that, because
Yeah.
they like Sony for the first Shaun the Sheep movie, Sony had it and they tried to market it. They, you know, put it was had theatrical release. It was promoted. It was, I think they had a Burger King deal. I mean, it was, there was an attempt to sell this movie and it just completely flopped. And
Yeah.
I just wonder, because I'm like, I just feel like the dynamics are so similar. You have these characters who don't talk, who make
Yeah.
silly, you know, have these pratfall, you know, things, and they're, I just don't understand, like, why.
Do you think it was because we didn't know the series as well? Like, how popular was the series here versus like overseas?
Maybe. I mean, I just worry that
And
children
Despicable Me,
today,
had that
I just,
already come out? Like,
well,
maybe that's
yeah. I
why.
mean, I just
Yeah.
worry that children today have become desensitized to the sense that only computer animation is really
Yes.
the only thing they'll respond to. And so stop motion, that's just not, they're not going to respond, which makes me really sad because
Yeah.
it's such a beautiful medium and it's so wonderful. And I think that there is some value to the Despicable Me and the Minions, and I they're not my favorite, but I get it. I get the
Yeah.
appeal. But it's just always been a bit of a puzzle to me. I mean, those movies, this last one made almost $1 billion and it had no, like,
It
it was just like this
was
secret.
a product, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least like with some of the other ones, it was kind of a bit of a thing. Like people, I felt like that movie made $1 billion with nobody talking about it, or almost $1 billion. And you know, I just wonder if kids are not being exposed to different kinds of animation enough. And so
Yeah.
really the CG is the only thing that appeals to them now, which would be a problem.
I agree with you. I think it's important to expose, especially like the earlier the better, all kinds of movies. Like
Yeah.
I have friends who show their kids like Cary Grant movies or musicals and like they don't know, they're sponges. They're just
Yeah.
absorbing everything. And like you and I grew up with, you know, the gorgeous hand-drawn animation, CG
Yeah.
animation, claymation, stop motion, all kinds of things,
Yeah.
puppetry.
Yeah.
And now some of these art forms are kind of falling by the wayside. Last winter, I was really excited and honored to talk to Noel McNeil, who is a puppeteer for Sesame Street. He directs Sesame Street, and he was actually Bear in the Big Blue House. And
Oh, wow. Yeah.
yeah, and he's the husband of my friend Susan Elia McNeil, the author, and she just said, "Oh, he, you know, works for Sesame Street or something," and didn't really explain it. And then when I knew it was Sesame Street's anniversary, and I said, "Oh, would Noel want to talk?" And I'm like, "He was Bear in the Big Blue," like, so we had a lot to talk
Yeah.
about. But how puppetry is even not as big as it was back then, and I think it's so important to, you know, showcase all of these styles of creativity and
It's
art forms,
true. We don't
because
want them to go away.
then they might want to play and try these things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we don't give kids enough credit if they actually get the chance to watch these films. There was this awesome, like, revival cinema that was, by me for a while. They're hopefully going to get it back. But they did a Saturday morning cartoons. With Looney Tunes was the one I went to. They did these Saturday morning, you're supposed to go in your jammies, and they had like a cereal bar and stuff. It was super fun. And
I remember you putting up photos from that. Yeah. I was jealous. I was like, I need to make a road trip and go.
Yes, you do. You do. And I was curious to see like how these kids would respond to Looney Tunes, and they had some mixture of more like modern Looney Tunes and older and just a whole bunch of shorts, and they ate it up. They laughed. They loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it. And so that was kind of reassuring to me. I'm like, okay, good.
Inspiring. Yes. Yeah.
Because I think we don't give them enough credit sometimes for that they have a wider palate than maybe we sometimes with kids.
Yeah. Exactly. But that's such a good point. I'm glad that you had that experience, because I wouldn't have known how they would play either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just hope that parents are showing their kids stop motion. Like, don't just do the CG. Do the stop motion, because it's incredible.
I also liked so much, you made a really great point when you were talking about how Shaun the Sheep is kind of a screwball. So you said that it's a film that's very close to your heart. So what are some of your thoughts on Shaun the Sheep?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of things I love about it, but the whole character arc for the farmer is absolutely hilarious. I love it so much. And then also that whole scene when they're at dinner is like comic gold. It is so good.
Yeah. The sequences that Aardman is able to develop, like, I mean, the chase sequence at the end of Wrong Trousers with the train, you know, building the train set in the living room and the heist. But in Shaun the Sheep, just, it's a staggering, I mean, achievement when you watch Shaun the Sheep, like how much is achieved without dialogue and how they keep building it. And it just gets funnier and funnier. Yeah.
And the dog, the farmer's dog, that's a classic comedy. He's the, you know, sort of the straight man character. Like, what is going on here? But yeah, I love that scene when they're all at dinner, because just the comic timing of it is so good. Hilarious. And I just think that I can't think of many characters that are cuter than Shaun.
Oh, I know.
Adorable.
I'd say Shaun, I'm a dog person, so I'm very partial to Gromit. A thing I love so much about Gromit is they didn't make him talk, but you know he's way smarter than Wallace.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so I love that. Like, but he adores him and wants to, you know, he gets jealous when his affection isn't as in demand as other people's affection and stuff. But also, you know, Wallace will say something and we'll see the eyes go to high heaven.
We get the face palm.
Yeah. And so Shaun the Sheep, another just insanely adorable character.
And I love it in the Wrong Trousers when Wallace invents the trousers that are going to walk Gromit, and he's just like,
and he goes to the park and goes down the slide instead.
And he's really sad that Wallace doesn't want to walk him. He's like,
what is your problem? Yes.
So they definitely have a very sweet relationship.
They do. Yeah. The way they use dogs in this series, knitting in this or entire, I should say series of films, but yeah. And the sweetness of siblings and the complexity and some of these villain characters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really like also how they do have those homages to different types of films. Like A Matter of Loaf and Death is definitely very like your Universal Monster movies kind of your thing.
Yeah.
And I think that if I had kids, which I don't have kids, but if I did, I would want to introduce my kids to as many different genres so that they get an opportunity to know, okay, this is what I like, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that Were Rabbit and Loaf and Death would be a great way to kind of introduce in a very safe way, be like, oh, my kid like really seemed to like being scared, because some kids do. And, yeah. And so I think that would be a pretty good one. And then you could maybe the next step would be, maybe do Coraline, another stop motion masterpiece, in my opinion. You could kind of go up that family scare, maybe then do Pinocchio, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Thing.
Oh my gosh. Pinocchio scared the heck out of me when I was little. Oof.
Me too. Yeah. The Wizard of Oz, I feel like that's also has some scary moments.
Terrifying.
You know, for,
for like different little reasons. Yeah. Uh-huh. Which is funny. Most people are like, oh, the monkeys and this. For me as a kid, it was this idea of you're away from home and you don't know how to get back or if you're getting back.
True.
That was just so traumatic.
Yeah.
That's
what makes me laugh with the whole, with the Wicked, which I love and adore, but it makes me laugh. You know, I'm like, this is not a nice person. Like, how are you? Just kill the doggy. Like,
yeah. I didn't actually see Wicked yet.
Oh,
I need to.
Oh, didn't. Okay.
No. Okay.
I really enjoyed it.
Ah, good.
And I was a little bit skeptical going into it, you know, if they were going to be able to pull it off. But it's not perfect, but I thought it was pretty entertaining.
Good deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any other Aardman titles that we didn't mention, that we didn't watch ahead, that you, of course, saw in your career as a critic and as a also as a film fan that you want to give a shout out to or anything?
They're all watchable. There's not like one that's like painful.
Yeah.
Their Pirates movie is. It's
I
a lot of fun.
That one.
Yeah, they basically have Darwin as like your villain, which is funny, and Queen Victoria is very over the top. And the world building, like the ships and the other things they create, is pretty impressive on that one. They had a short, Robin.
Okay.
That, this was 2021. This was really cute, about, this, bird that gets raised by by mice. So he thinks it's a mouse. It's pretty cute. So, they're still doing shorts. I mean, they had a Shaun the Sheep, The Flight Before Christmas, and that was really cute.
You know, I think I saw that and I hadn't seen, Farmageddon, actually. So that one I need to see. Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
I really like Farmageddon. The alien is adorable. And yeah, it's all because, both of the Shaun the Sheep movies are basically the plot gets started because he's bored.
Yes.
Because Shaun is bored.
The sheep sort of, your toddlers would relate to that. Like, we're bored. Yeah. We need something to do. And so they need something to do and they come up with an idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Some other cool things. There's actually, I don't know if you heard about this that they did on Disney Plus called Star Wars Visions.
No.
This was pretty cool. This was they mostly anime.
Okay.
They gave different anime directors just like carte blanche, make a Star Wars short.
Oh, wow.
And so it's pretty cool. Like, it's a fun little series that they did. And I think they had two seasons of it.
Ah.
And so you get to see like all these different animators and what their vision of Star Wars would be or what they would do. And they have one on there.
Oh my gosh.
Aardman. So
I would
that's
love
cool.
To see that. Yeah.
Something like a little bit different from them. And then also, I don't know. Have you seen Over the Garden Wall?
No.
Oh, mm-mm. Highly, highly recommend it. It's a masterpiece in my opinion. And it's 10 Over the Garden Wall. It was 10 shorts and it's very inspired by Wizard of Oz and some of those things. These two brothers get lost in this forest and, the world of the unknown. And you sort of learn little clues about something like, oh, is there more going on behind the scenes? What's going on? And some of the shorts are more funny, but they're all kind of spooky and brilliant, really great. But anyway, for the 10th anniversary of Over the Garden Wall last year, Aardman did a tribute to Over the Garden Wall. So you got all of the Over the Garden Wall in stop motion, which was super cool.
Oh, super, nice. Super cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something to definitely look up as well. Okay. The music in Over the Garden Wall is absolutely beautiful, and it's just a really, really beautiful work of art. And so those are some, like, little bit more if you want to do, like, a deep dive into Aardman, some more obscure stuff, but
yeah,
you really cannot go wrong. Like, yes, some are better than others. I like I said, that Chicken Run sequel or isn't my favorite. Early Man is imperfect, but it's they all are watchable. They really, I think they're all, yeah. So
I
that's
also
pretty
saw
good.
Like a series, I remember something of World of Invention or Wallace and Gromit.
Oh, yeah.
Like they did some of those little series, which I thought were clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. And I did get the chance to interview both Nick Park and I interviewed Merlin Crossingham, who is the co-director on a lot of these, for Rotoscopers back in 2018. So that was super cool to get to talk with them. That was a pinch me moment to get to talk to both of them. So,
did you learn anything amazing you wanted to share?
Well, we talked about how long it takes for them to do I gotta find it. Let's see. That it says here. So yeah, so it said that I asked him about Arthur Christmas.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, Arthur Christmas and Fleshed Away. I'm a clay man myself, which I love that you said that.
Yes.
There's a certain charm that comes with clay, and it's limiting how you can make your clay figures move. It's very labor intensive, but for me, there's a kind of humor that comes with it, which totally makes sense.
Yeah.
There's something that comes from it that's very human, strangely enough as well. I'm not saying you can't achieve great things with CG. You obviously can. You just have to look at Pixar. I just think there's something a lot more scaled down. Which I think
agree.
Is true.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the way Gromit was born out of clay. I'm not sure it would have been the same if he was on a computer screen.
No.
The fact I had to be at the very beginning, try and animated him and just move his brow and tweak it each frame 12 times per second. The closer you are handling a character every frame, you kind of endue a certain soul really into the character, and it's very good at little human nuances and changing expressions. That's what I discovered.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah. I will be sure to link to this article when I post this episode. It'll be on my Patreon, which is where all of these episodes begin. But you can listen everywhere. But look that up, Rachel.
I
Wagner.
Like that.
Yeah.
That he really managed to, he felt like he had imparted some of his soul.
Soul.
In it.
That's so beautiful. And again, like we were talking about, the level of craftsmanship that goes into these stop motion, claymation, animation films, which, I think makes them so special. And I was so glad to talk about all of these with you, Rachel. So
they're so incredible, and we just need to show these stop motion brands more love. Aardman and Leica and anybody else who dives in, whether it's, you know, Guillermo del Toro's, whether it's his Pinocchio, like that was an incredible work of art. So yeah, let's support stop motion. Yay.
Yay. Yeah. I'm glad that Del Toro is starting to do some of that too.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yes. Well, Rachel, I want to thank you so much for doing this, and you'll have to come up with another topic and come back soon.
Yes. Yeah. And we'll have to get you on Hallmarkies again. That was really fun when we talked about Jane Eyre.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Fun. Okay. Great.
Okay. I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.